Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 49, and today we'll be talking about handwriting strategies for kids. I had an email request recently to talk about handwriting strategies with kids from an occupational therapy perspective. So I'm going to talk about the handwriting strategies in general today and try to incorporate aspects for all kids that struggle with handwriting for one reason or another. First, I wanted to discuss a research study that looked at handwriting with kids who have dysgraphia. In case you don't know, dysgraphia is where you have trouble with writing skills. It literally means bad or impaired writing. People who have dysgraphia could have difficulty with one or more aspects of handwriting. They could also have some difficulty with other fine motor activities, but usually not with all fine motor activities. There are actually different types of dysgraphia, but for the purpose of keeping it simple here, we'll just go with this explanation. One thing to keep in mind with this also is that it is a type of processing disorder. Rather than a sensory processing issue, it is more of a learning and motor processing issue. So not everyone who struggles with handwriting will have dysgraphia. It's not just a catch-all phrase for people with handwriting difficulties. The research study is titled Handwriting Performance, Self-Reports, and Perceived Self-Efficacy Among Children with Dysgraphia. It was published in 2009 in the American Journal of Occupational Therapy. You can find the links for this study in my show notes. The researchers looked at 42 second and third graders in a mainstream school in Israel. There were 15 boys and 6 girls in each group, and the kids were divided into two groups based on the HPSQ, which is a questionnaire that helps identify kids who have difficulties with handwriting. Basically, one group of kids had dysgraphia and the other did not. The HPSQ was completed by the kids' parents, and the children were asked questions based on a CHAP, which covers the same type of questions as the ones that their parents filled out. This is more of a self-report questionnaire for the kids, so the researchers can get an idea from the beginning of the study as to how the kids think they do with handwriting activities before they actually measure their handwriting skills. At the time of the study, the CHAP was under development and not considered to be a standardized test as of yet. Then, after that, the kids were tested using the computerized penmanship evaluation tool, which is standardized, and it is an assessment where the kids write on a tablet, and the data is collected from this tablet and analyzed by their software. Now, the tablet is not what I originally thought of when I read the word tablet. It's not an iPad. It appears that this tablet is a large rectangular item that they place the child's paper on top of, and it somehow is digitized and analyzes their handwriting. So the child will write on their piece of paper and use this special wireless pen on top of the tablet rather than just on their desk. The study asks the students to copy a paragraph onto their paper using this wireless pen. And the pen was reportedly similar in size and weight and shape to regular pens that we usually write with so that it wouldn't affect their grasp. The results showed that children with dysgraphia scored significantly worse than the children with typical handwriting on each subscale of the HPSQ. And in most handwriting processes measured by the computer program. The results also indicated that the children with lower scores on the self-report scale also had lower handwriting performance. The study also showed that the children that felt that their handwriting was illegible and that they reported feeling less capable with keeping pace with the time constraints in their class on their writing had lower perceived self-efficacy scores also. The study seemed to suggest that kids with dysgraphia can recognize that they have difficulties with writing, and it can affect how successful they feel like they will be in completing handwriting tasks. This might indicate that we really need to be aware of these kids' perceptions when it comes to handwriting and legibility issues, and that teachers, parents, and therapists should all be involved in forming a plan to work with these children and find a way to make them have the most success in the classroom. So moving on to today's show, I recently had a show about grasp development, so I won't be talking about that piece of handwriting today. For today, I want to focus on other strategies like sensory considerations, hand strength and endurance, reinforcers, and things like that. When someone mentions handwriting to me, I always cringe just a little at first. My first thought is, boring. Then I tell myself, okay, it's not that bad. Handwriting is not just sit down and practice writing these non-meaningful sentences over and over and over again. Although for some reason, that is still my gut reaction and just hearing that word for some reason. I have worked with a lot of kids on handwriting activities over the years, and luckily, I get to work with kids mostly in their home environment, so I have a lot more freedom when it comes to this activity. With the early intervention and the preschool ages, handwriting is even more flexible. We're working on forming some lines, shapes, and letters, but there is less expectation of long sessions of repetition with them. With the older kids, there is more repetition, but I still prefer to find ways to make it as purposeful as possible. The reason that we as OTs are seeing these kids for handwriting most often has to do with underlying issues that are causing the handwriting to be difficult for them. So just working on repetition of letters and words and things like that may not be good enough or effective for them. We need to get to the underlying reasons why this activity is difficult for them and work on those at the same time. Of course, as an OT, I have to consider possible sensory processing issues when it comes to handwriting activities. So let's talk about that first. Before you can expect a child with sensory issues to sit and focus on something, anything for that matter, not just handwriting, you need to make sure that their sensory needs are being met. So if the child has a difficult time sitting still to focus because they are a kid who likes to be moving a lot, we need to give them extra movement before trying to start the activities. Of course, these suggestions will vary depending on each child's individual needs, but as always, I will try to give you a lot of different suggestions, and you can use them as appropriate for each situation. I would consider having the child do any activity that involves movement of their head and body, in other words, vestibular and proprioceptive activities. The interesting thing is that vestibular or movement activities could also be used for those kids who need to have stimulating or alerting activities in order to be ready for learning. However, usually the proprioceptive activities are considered to be more along the lines of calming for most people. These are things like activities that involve deep pressure or heavy work for the body. For kids who need help to be able to sit due to their more active nature, I often use movement and deep pressure activities in a combined way as much as possible. That way we're hitting them both. Some examples of these are things like pushing a heavy object across the floor. Consider having the object be lower to the ground so they have to bend down to push it. This will not only work on having their head bent in different planes, but also can get them moving forward and doing heavy work at the same time, activating the muscles in their whole body, but especially their arms and legs. Other ideas are things like rolling over a therapy ball on their tummy and pushing off the floor or a wall with their hands. They could also flip over and roll over the ball on their back and do the same thing. You can find a variety of ways to use a scooter board, sitting or laying and pushing and pulling actions with that. Kids can sit and hold onto a hula hoop or a rope while you push and pull them on the scooter. Using songs like Row Your Boat for younger kids or just music for any of the ages can make it more fun. Of course, if they have issues with auditory processing, then the music may not be a good idea, because of the extra stimulation of the sounds might actually work against what you're trying to do with them. Any movement activities that you can think of that can get them moving and doing some work with their muscles at the same time can be used. We have to get creative. If you know what the child likes, you can and should incorporate those things into the activities. For example, if a child likes basketball, you can use that. Maybe they can jump on a mini trampoline and pass the ball back and forth with you at the same time, if they're coordinated enough, or if you want to work on their coordination also. An obstacle course or other activities that you can set up that gets them crawling, creeping, scooting, jumping, running, spinning, rolling, swinging, and walking backwards are great for this. Wall pushes or wheelbarrow walking, jumping jacks, regular push-ups, jumping rope, and other things like these can be done in a circuit training type way, not for the purpose of fitness, just a few short reps of activities to get their body moving and get their sensory needs met. We aren't trying to make them fitness buffs. For those kids that need activities to help them be more alert, the kiddos that have a hard time sitting in an upright position for any length of time because their body wants to lean or lay down a lot, focus more on things that get their head moving without the deep pressure or heavy work involved. More of the things like swinging activities, platform swinging or regular swing sets, or blanket swinging, using the therapy ball to have them lay over it on their tummy or their back, and just roll them back and forth in different directions without them necessarily doing the pushing. They can just sit on the ball and you can bounce them on it and get that up and down head movement. This can be stimulating for some kids who are more of what I would consider low arousal, and the deep pressure could also be stimulating to some of them or wake up their muscles in a different way. But that is where your clinical judgment comes into play. You have to be able to read the child's reactions to the different types of activities and know which ones are alerting them and which ones are making them lay on the floor even more than before. So, not only do we need to consider getting their body prepared for the sitting and attending activity, but we need to consider preparing their hands and arms for this also. Since these are the things we will be using to do the handwriting activities, we need to make sure they are prepared too. Now, with all of the proprioceptive activities, you might have already accomplished this. The deep pressure from those could have been enough to bring awareness to their hands and arms to be able to do the fine motor activity. However, you can also use things like vibration with a variety of vibrating sensory toys or squeezing activities with different toys or bottles, maybe having them play using some sensory bins like ones filled with rice, beans, or pasta. You could use Play-Doh or slime or goop or other tactile activities also. You can possibly do their brushing protocol if they have a sensory brush, or even just letting them brush their hands and arms using a variety of tactile objects like dish brushes or a scratch pad or a washcloth to rub on their hands and literally wake them up themselves. Not only do I work with kids on getting their body prepared before we start these handwriting type activities, but I also continue to use these strategies throughout the entire session, so during the activity and also after. I also use these types of strategies as part of the handwriting activity itself whenever possible and when it's appropriate for the situation. Depending on the age and developmental level of the child, you may not be able to get them to sit at the table to do handwriting, at least not yet. But that's okay too, and something that you'll be working towards as a goal if that's the case. In the meantime, thinking outside the box may be necessary for them. Handwriting practice doesn't have to be sitting up in your chair at the table and nicely writing your letters. I think that is what a lot of people jump to when they first think about handwriting for therapy, but that doesn't always happen. If the child is able to sit and do some writing work at the table after getting their sensory needs met, then great. Use that time wisely. Get to the part that you want to work on first thing. That way you have the best chance of helping them be the most successful. If you wait too long or do too many other things before that, you might miss the prime opportunity for learning. Of course, this depends on their individual ability and needs. Some kids will be able to sit and do many writing activities without needing to do any more sensory movements and do just fine. Others will benefit from additional sensory activities during the session to keep themselves going. Sometimes just having them sit on a balance disc or a stability ball at the table during the writing activity will be enough to get them through. Or maybe having a TheraBand around the legs of the chair for them to kick or push against with their feet for ongoing proprioceptive input. Maybe having a weighted lap pad while sitting would be helpful for them. Some kids will do better with completing one writing task than getting up and doing another sensory activity. You can alternate between the two things. This can be rewarding to some kids because they feel good again with the sensory activities. They start to put it together, and it becomes predictable to them that once they do the next task, they will get to move again. It could help them to know that they won't be expected to just sit there and try for too long. However, as I said before, there are many kids who are literally just not ready for sitting in a chair and doing their writing. We can work with that too. In fact, that is more interesting and fun for everyone involved most of the time. With these kids, I love to work on handwriting type skills in so many different ways. Now, most of the time, I'm working with kids in their homes, so I just use what their home situation has to offer. We find different places in and around their home to use, and whatever objects or items that are available there. For example, we might lay underneath a coffee table with a large piece of construction paper taped to the bottom of it, and color on the paper lying on our backs under the table. We might use an easel if they have one, and have the paper on an upright or vertical surface, and they can also stand up while coloring or drawing. We can use shaving cream on their sliding glass door or the bathroom mirror, and they can practice making shapes or letters in the shaving cream using their fingers to draw them. We can use other textures like pudding or yogurt on a cookie sheet and practice drawing using their hands in the food. Maybe they could lay on their tummy or on the floor and do it in different position. All of these things, while maybe not the best setup for working on specific shapes or letters or words, can still work on those other pieces of the handwriting activity, including grip strength and endurance, hand and arm strength and endurance, body awareness, and shoulder stabilization. All of these strengthening and other activities that work towards the ability to sit at a table and work on writing stuff eventually. Not to mention the added benefit of having them in different positions to provide some additional vestibular sensory input, like lying on their back. That changes their head position, which can be stimulating for their vestibular sense and could be alerting for that child and help them pay attention longer. Sometimes I will do these large motor movements with kids first to practice and then move to the table setting immediately after to reinforce that on the smaller scale for writing. This can be a very effective strategy with kids who have, for example, dysgraphia, although many kids can benefit from this, even kids without dysgraphia. Those gross motor movements can be easier for them to accomplish. Then the idea is to move to making those same movements in a more fine motor way, where with the gross motor actions, you are getting more of the whole arm moving at the shoulder or elbow. The fine motor piece would be moving more of just their wrist or hand and fingers. Getting back to strategies, I will often have the children get into these different positions, lying down or standing or whatever, and work on different, just fine motor activities at the same time. Even when the goal is handwriting, fine motor activities that are challenging for the child can improve their purposeful and controlled movements of their hands and fingers. This is not handwriting directly, but it is working on skills necessary to be able to improve handwriting. You can't always just focus on the handwriting part. Focus on forming the letters and not looking at other factors like grip and hand strength and hand and finger coordination or endurance, not only of their hand and fingers, but of their entire body, to be able to sit long enough to write something appropriate for their age or developmental level. Tactile sensory strategies are often helpful for kids to learn how to form shapes and lines and letters when they're at that stage of writing. You can use different textures like sand or rice or paint to draw in using their finger or a tool. When they can actually feel the textures with their hand or finger, it can provide some good sensory feedback to their body and help them try to remember that feeling and the movements when they're using a pencil or something else to write with on paper. The good thing about those tactile activities is they can continue tracing over the form that they're drawing several times if they want for extra practice and motor memory. It is also easy to, quote unquote, erase and start again with the same form or a new one. Visual scanning activities are good ones to work on, incorporating the visual skills and their fine motor skills together. You can have them visually scan the environment to find certain objects when you ask them to, at different levels that are lower and higher in the room. Visual scanning is a very important skill for being able to read and write, like being able to follow along on the paper when they're writing or reading. You can place alphabet letters or sight word cards or whatever types of things that you're working on with them writing. Place them on the floor and have them crab walk around the room to get certain ones, or move around on a scooter on their tummy, or roll over a therapy ball and pick it up before you roll them back again. Things like that to incorporate, again, the vestibular sensory input with gross and fine motor and visual scanning all in one simple activity. If they're able to understand the concept, you can use worksheets or just make your own larger sheet with random alphabet letters all around the page and ask them to find all of the letter G's, for example, and place a sticker on it or mark through it with an X using paint and a paintbrush, or just dot it with a dot marker. There's so many options for this as well. For the even older kids, they can scan a short paragraph that is typed out for them and highlight each time they see a certain word. Again, they don't have to be sitting in a chair at a table to do this, but they also can be sitting at a table to do this. Just depends on where they are at with their skills. Some potential ideas for grip strength and endurance activities could be things like using a potato smasher to smash Play-Doh or other objects, squeezing things like tongs to pick up objects and placing those objects into other containers, cutting activities with scissors, squeezing clothespins and getting creative with those by like coloring them and matching the colors with other objects, or sight words attached to them and matching the sight word by squeezing the clothespin onto the card with the matching one. You can have them use squirt bottles or empty shampoo bottles and practice squeezing those to water the trees outside or do other water play with those, or sponges that they can squeeze and twist and smash to get the water to come out. There are just too many options out there for hand and grip strength, and there are so many more that I know you guys probably have some really great ideas. I would love to hear them. So if you can, send me a quick message on Instagram or Facebook about it today. I'll have a post in both places and about this episode, so people will be able to reference that and also see your ideas. Another area that you can give ideas about are strategies for working on writing with older kids. Sometimes with the older kids, if they understand the concept of a reward system, you can incorporate legible school worksheets with rewards. So this can help reinforce the idea of working on the handwriting on their own while they're at school. The parents can randomly choose one or two worksheets from their schoolwork at the end of each week and check to see if they can read the child's writing. They should set the parameters for this ahead of time, of course, but determine if the paper is maybe 50% legible or 75%, and they can get certain rewards based on that criteria. Then the child should get their reward of what they had previously determined they would work for and continue on the next week again fresh. This won't work for everyone, obviously, but is just one possible idea. You would have to come up with reward strategies for each specific individual. And even with the older kids, rewards may not work, so you will have to, again, get creative. And I usually like to start with looking at what their real interests are. Try and incorporate those somehow if possible, because they will be most likely more motivated by those things. Not that you'll be taking them away or withholding them, but just finding interesting ways to use those activities in what you are already doing with their handwriting strategies. There are, of course, many items out there that can be helpful for people who need the extra support to hold the pencils and things for writing, and I'm not against these at all. I know these are beneficial items for so many people that need them. I would recommend that you try these other options first, or in addition to using these helpful other items. I want kids to be successful, so if these things help them be successful, then I want them to have them. But I also still encourage you to have them work on the issues and try to continue to strengthen their overall skills so that they will hopefully not need any additional items for assistance at some point. We want to try to get at the underlying issue first. In my opinion, this is not much different, if at all, than using sensory strategies like weighted blankets or stability balls when appropriate. We hope that eventually they won't need these things either, but in the meantime, we will use them when we need to and also work on the core issues that are causing them to have difficulties with the task of sitting and writing. Now, I know the title of today's show had the word handwriting in it and that I hardly talked about actual handwriting itself in this episode. But the main reason for that is, as I mentioned in the beginning, as OTs, we have to find the underlying reasons why handwriting is difficult for kids and focus on that. If we can help them with these things and work in handwriting strategies at the same time, it should be a more effective plan of action than just sitting down and repetitively copying letters and words with seemingly no purpose. Okay, I'm going to end there for today, but before I completely finish up, I have a special treat. My 10, actually, next month will be 11-year-old son wrote a short story called The Most Peculiar Story That Was Ever Told, and he's going to be reading that for you today. It's a special Halloween treat, so happy Halloween and enjoy.
The most peculiar story that was ever told was the story of Patricia Mould, who lived on Skeleton Lane. She had just moved into the old Douglas's house, and she slept in the top room in a little rickety bed that squeaked mighty loud when you laid down on it. The room was small and cramped, only room for a dresser and bed. The first night in the new house was very scary indeed. Patricia was laying in her bed when she heard a small voice. "Patricia," it whispered, and at the same time the lights flickered on. Weird, Patricia thought, and she flicked the lights back off. Suddenly the blinds started opening and closing, and the lights started flickering on and off. The door opened and shut, and the wallpaper peeled away. Behind it were rats and corpses. Patricia heard voices call from beyond the grave and make ghoulish demands, and abruptly, it all stopped. Patricia looked down at the foot of her bed, and she saw a little ghost girl. The ghost looked over and said, "It's coming." Nobody ever saw Patricia or the Douglas's house again. Years later, however, somebody did find in the spot where the house once stood, buried in layers of dirt and rubble, the little rickety bed Patricia slept in.